So I hope everybody is here that was here this morning and more. It's lovely to see so many familiar faces here. I hope that we can share together something more of this seminar series on Srila Rupa Goswami. So first of all, I would like to review a few of the points that we made this morning for our remembrance. The name of our seminar is called Going Beyond the Reach of Time. So tomorrow morning we'll hear something more of time and the effect of time upon us, although perhaps most of us are quite aware of the effects of time, the negative and the positive effects of time. But beyond the effects of time, we're not very familiar with that place at all. But Srila Rupa Goswami, he's completely familiar and comfortable with that place. So he is going to share with us both the process of going beyond time and also what is there when we get there. So this morning we heard some small hints, little droplets you could say, of what the spiritual world, the spiritual realm is like. We heard about, who can remember? Who did we hear about? Krishna, we heard about Krishna, we heard about his grandfather, yes, his associates, what classifications of associates that he has. We heard about his grandfather, what was that? Eight groups, yes, of personal associates. Do you remember who they were? Worshipable elders, relatives, gopi messengers, his servants, craftsmen, his maidservants, cowherd boys, and his very special, closest, most intimate, most affectionate gopis, headed by Srimati Radharani. We also heard about Vishakha. We heard about how she arranges messengers. She's an expert messenger. She's expert in diplomacy. Did anybody remember what she's very good at doing? Cow saver? Counselor. Counselor, yes. Yes. What are some of her methods? Yes, she knows how to reconcile when they're angry with each other. What else does she know how to do? Logic. Yes. Huh? She's very provocative. She's loquacious. Also, she knows how to create our arguments. This is very important for all ladies to know, how to create arguments. Many ladies know this on the material level already, but when this is dedicated in the service of Krishna, she knows how to make everything work in favor of Radha. So if Krishna comes forward and he says something, she will make some very clever comment to make Krishna a little smaller and Radha a little taller, but all in the service of Krishna. Because of these eight different separated groups, the most important one are Krishna's most intimate gopi beloveds. So this is very good. It's wonderful that you're remembering so much. We also heard about Krishna's beauty. Does anyone remember anything about that? He has long curly black hair. Yes, so many different marks on the hands and so many on the feet. And what about his forehead? What is on the forehead? Tilak marks and? Curly locks of hair. Now you look, you can see here in this world, people stand in front of the mirror for ages, just getting these, just so they look casually, just as if they happen to be there, these curls bordering the side of the face. And then they get their photo taken with an artificial smile. And everyone goes, my goodness, that's a beautiful young man or a young lady. But Krishna naturally has all this beauty. Krishna has unlimited beauty. We can't, again, this is inconceivable to us. One time I heard my husband say, it's like this. If you were to go, if you could, all through the whole universe. And you found all the most beautiful things and the most beautiful people. And if you could extract their beauty, if you could take it away for some time, take away the beauty of the landscape, take away the beauty of people's eyes, of people's bodies, of people's speech, of everything, you could extract it all. Still, it would just be like a drop in the ocean of Krishna's beauty. And this, the irony of this is that here we are thinking, ah, I don't know if I could actually make a life of Krishna consciousness. I don't know if it would be enough for me. I don't know if I was to surrender more, whether I'd be satisfied, whether I'd get all my needs met, whether I'd be secure enough. I'm not sure. Let me just wait a while. I'll just take a little longer. Now, sometimes we may be thinking in a different way. We may be thinking, I'm just not good enough. I just actually don't have the ability. I don't have the capacity to surrender more. I don't have the taste to surrender more. I don't have the inclination to surrender more. So how can I trust myself? But very quickly, this, how can I trust myself? You watch your mind and you'll see it will very quickly go over to the other side and say, how can I trust myself? But also, how can I trust? And there we are. We're doubting that Krishna, who's unlimited in all respects, has what we need. We're suspicious of his promise. We're suspicious and doubtful that when he says, just surrender unto me, that will be enough. Certainly there'll be something he might have overlooked. Right? Something can go wrong. A problem may come up. I may find myself in some sort of difficulty, as if I don't already, as if there aren't problems already. So this is a very interesting subject, and we'll deal with this tomorrow morning. The nature of the material world, which also includes, of course, the nature of the mind, of the jiva, who is within the material world. And this, of course, applies to every one of us who are here. But now, let us hear a little about somebody who's not gone beyond the reach of time, but who was never within the realm of material time, who never came to the position of being unsurrendered to Krishna, who never became disloyal to their master, who never turned their back on the person who loves them most, who never, ever, ever, not even in a breath or a dream, would even imagine doing such a thing. And so you can understand from our position that it's very important, vital in fact, that we find the help of somebody just like this. So Srila Rupa Goswami, he's calling us and begging us to please follow him. He's giving a process. Please come with me. And all of our Guru Parampara follow in the line of Rupa Goswami. Srila Prabhupada himself, in the beginning of his Krishna Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, he offers all respects to Rupa Goswami. He says this Krishna consciousness movement is authorized by Rupa Goswami. And he says that it is functioning under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. Under the supervision. So what does it mean that this Krishna consciousness movement is functioning under the supervision of this personality? Let us hear. So first, a little about the life, a bio, as they would put it, of Srila Rupa Goswami. So in a book called Laghu Toshini, Shijiva Goswami, who is the nephew of Rupa Goswami, he gives a detailed account, because Shijiva Goswami by nature, if you read his literature, you'll see it's very exact, very detailed, very precise, and very, very thorough. Srila Prabhupada one time said of Shijiva Goswami that never was there a scholar like him, and never will there be a scholar like him. He was so brilliant. So everything that he writes, You see, when you read, it's almost difficult to read it. It's so meticulously presented with detail. So he gives the generation, seven generation, detailed description of his family. And he goes back into the time of his seventh generation back elders and explains that his family originally came from Karnataka. And they were Sarasvat Brahmanas in the Bharadwaj Gotra. And his seventh generation back forefather was a Brahmin king. So after that time, most of the personages that he mentions in his family were either Brahminical or they were somehow or other related to some kind of ruling position. And then his grandfather, he moved because there was some tension in the family, two brothers and some conflict. This is not uncommon, is it, in Kali Yuga? So his grandfather and his great-grandfather moved from Karnataka to live by the bank of the Ganga. And his father, whose name was Kumar Das, he moved to live in what is nowadays known as Jeshur in Bangladesh. And from there, he was living, he was very spiritually respected, materially respected. He had a large family, and three of his sons, as we know, Rupa, Sanatan, and Balava, his third son, Sanatan being the oldest and Balava being the youngest, these three sons of his became extraordinarily exalted Vaishnavas. Now, at that time, the ruling management in Bengal was under the Mughal government. And so the Sultan of Bengal, Nawab Hussain Shah, he was told, recommended by his counselors, that he should get some Hindu personages onto his government. Otherwise, it would be difficult for him to manage with so many Hindus under him. And then he was informed by a very learned person in his council that Rupa and Sanatan would be ideal personalities. At that time, they didn't have, of course, these names. These names were given to them by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they were recommended to him as the most suitable people to keep within his council so that the local Hindus would respect him and they would feel obliged to actually accept him. And so, in order to do that, of course, neither of these persons were inclined towards government service, especially since they were from such high-class Brahminical families. Never would it have entered their minds to serve under a Muslim of this nature in this kind of situation. So the Nawab Hussain Shah, he made sure that he had an implement to get them into the position that he wanted. So he threatened them that if they did not take up the service, then he would begin persecuting Vaishnavas and Brahmins throughout Bengal. And they knew very well that he was completely capable of doing that. And so with some trepidation and an extreme amount of uneasiness, Rupa Goswami, who was at that time became known as Dabhya Kash, he was the chief secretary to the Nawab, and Sanatan Goswami was known as the state revenue collector, and his name became Sakir Malik. They took up Muslim names. They were ostracized completely from the strict Brahminical culture of the time. And they kept doing this service, and simultaneously, because of their exalted natural qualities, they managed to keep in the place where they lived, which was known as Ramakeli, keep another life going as well. So this is very important because none of us here have the misfortune or the high qualification to be forced into such exalted positions in society. Most of us are just having to work a life with a job and a family and the other responsibilities that come along with that. Yet we also have to learn to keep a life as well. And to have a life as well, you have to understand which is your life. If you think this is your life, then you will only have this. If you understand that this is actually a complication. It's almost an embarrassment to be here in this material world. For a saintly person, it is an embarrassment. So if we were to think in that way, why aren't I with Krishna? Why am I here? It's as if I've been ostracized by the spiritual energy to keep me here. And here I'm so absorbed in so many things, I hardly ever remember Krishna. And if we were to think like this, that's the beginning, the seed of a desire to have a life. Implying, of course, that this life that we think is our life is not our life. And that we spoke about earlier this morning also. This is a reflection of reality. So to have some reality in our life would be very, very valuable. So Rupa Goswami, Sakir Malik and Dabir Kash, they were serving in this way, but they had a life. In where they lived in Ramakeli, they created a Radhakund and a Shamakund. They employed many brahmanas to come in their spare time, which they made, so they could hear the Bhagavatam and study it. They were earnest about these things, because to them this was the only meaningful part. The rest of it was all duty, but this was really the essence of their existence. So they continued in this way, and they heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but they were not in a position to go and see him. So they wrote to him. They wrote to him in extremely humble mood, in a very, very, very humble way, and asked his help in their circumstances. And in this way, they attracted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so much that when he came, soon after he had been in Jagannath Puri, he paid a visit. He told the other followers of his in Jagannath Puri, "I want to go to Vrindavan. Please let me go to Vrindavan." And they said, "All right." And he said, "First I will go to Mayapur, to Navadvip, and see my mother and the Ganga, and then I will go to Vrindavan." So it's interesting to note that he came, he walked all the way from Puri to Bengal. He saw his mother. He saw so many of the devotees of Mayapur and Navadvip who were overjoyed to see him again. And then he said, "Now I'm going to Vrindavan." Now, if you have a map of India, everyone knows that here is Bengal and here is Vrindavan. So you would walk this way. But he went this way. He went up the Ganga, and he came to a place, as we had just heard of, named Ramakeli. And when he got there, he was surrounded by thousands and thousands of followers, because everywhere he went, he was so attractive that so many people would come and join him. And so by the time he got there, he was surrounded by so many men. And what would he do with all these people surrounding him? What do you think he would do? He would make them chant. He would begin kirtan, and everybody would join in. Now, Ramakeli also was the place where Nawab Hussain Shah lived. So when Lord Chaitanya came there, there were certain people, certain Hindus in that society that were very worried about him being there because it was dangerous. The Nawab was known for his violence and for his spontaneous cruelty. And here was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just dancing with no guardedness, just openly dancing, chanting, not thinking about anything of this world. So they tried to send a messenger to warn him, to say to him, "Please, don't chant so loud here. This is not a good place to chant so loudly, because the Nawab will hear." And the Nawab did hear. And he looked and he saw that there were multitudes of people dancing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And amongst them were many of his own men. And he was quite astonished. But he was so taken aback that he didn't choose to do anything violent. He called one of the other Hindu personages in his government and asked them, who is this person? And he made very less. He said, oh, he's a sort of some kind of a prophet of some sort. I think he's not very well known. He's just sort of come here. He's on his way somewhere. He tried to make it very minimal because he was afraid. And when the Noah heard him saying so many things, he said, you know, I don't believe you. He said, this is not an ordinary person. This must be the Supreme Lord himself. Even the Noah could understand. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, meanwhile, was dancing and chanting and dancing and chanting. And they couldn't get a message through to him because he was so absorbed in transcendental ecstasies throughout the whole time, day and night. In the evening, Rupa and Sanatan and their brother Anupam, or Balava, they decided that they should go and see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu since he had come so fortunately to Ramakeli. And it is said that they took grass, blades of straw and grass, and they placed them in their mouth. And this is a sign of extreme humility, that I am like lower than the grass. I'm like a blade of grass. I'm so insignificant. And they came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the night. And they presented themselves to him. They were so happy to meet him. But they were so ashamed of their position in society. And they were so exalted and so respected. They had everything that a man would want. But they were so ashamed of it. And they said, we are so fallen, so insignificant, so worthless. Nobody, even Jagai and Madhai, had good qualities. At least they had, and they found good qualities in Jagai and Madhai. At least they respected Brahmanas. But look at us. So this is the mood of a Vaishnava, an exalted Vaishnava. They don't think, yes, I'm exalted, and I'm becoming more exalted daily, and in future, I will probably become one of the most exalted people on the planet. They don't think like that. They think, I'm worthless. I'm completely worthless. I'm worth nothing. And so therefore, what do I need? What do I need? I need shelter. I need mercy. I need kripa, mercy. I need help. Help! And what is modern society teaching us? Exactly the opposite. You can do it. Have a positive look or outlook on life. You can become this, you can become that. So many things you can become, don't they? And always independent, independent. Make yourself strong. Do it yourself. Become something. And here we see, so we're exposed to this, whereas he was like this, completely at the other end of the scale. So Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami beg Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please, if you can find some way in your heart to accept us, we would be beyond grateful. It means everything to us if you could accept us. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu blessed them both. And he changed their names. He gave them initiation. And he told them, don't worry. He said, in future, you will get free from this encumbrance. Don't be afraid. Just go on and Krishna will take care of everything. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he left. He went back towards Jagannath Puri. And Rupa Sanatan, they had different roles in the government, and hence Rupa and his brother Anupam were able to retire immediately, and they left without any delay. But Sanatan Goswami, having a more responsible position, he was delayed by his responsibilities. So Rupa Goswami, he sent some men to Jagannath Puri. He sent men to Jagannath Puri, and when they came back saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already left from Jagannath Puri to Prayag, when that message was delivered to him, He also left immediately by way of the Ganga to reach Prayag and meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there for the, how many times? Second time. This was his second meeting. How many meetings did Rupa Goswami have with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Three. Only three. Not more than three. He spent time with him in Prayag, Benares. He spent time with him in Ramakeli, a very few hours, 10 days or more in Benares. And then after that, he spent 10 months in Jagannath Puri sometime later. So Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami for 10 days, and the basis of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami are in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 19. Most of chapter 19 is dedicated to those teachings. And if you're a studious sort of person, you will note that if you read a summary of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, you'll see that all of these subjects are covered also there. So this is because, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami wrote everything that he was instructed down, and it has been presented to us through Srila Prabhupada's extreme hard work as the Nectar of Devotion. So then Rupa Goswami went on to Vrindavan, looking for his brother, because one of the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is said, he said to him that you and your brother Sanatan should relocate all the sacred places of Vrindavan, write books, establish deities, and make everything possible for future generations to understand the philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So he went to Vrindavan looking for Sanatan, but he didn't meet him. And instead, when he got to Mathura, now when we think of Vrindavan, right, if we haven't been to Vrindavan, we would think of some place in India. If we haven't been to some place in India, then it's more difficult. But if we've been to India or been to Vrindavan, you'll think of a place, lots and lots of houses, roads, people, conveniences, a big shopping center in the middle of town, old temples, many, many, many things are there. Many people live there. But at the time when Rupa Goswami was going there, nobody lived there. There was no one living in Vrindavan. There was no temples. There was no Loi Bazaar. There was nothing. There was nothing to eat there. There was nothing to see there. There was only forest. And so when Rupa came, he went instead, he went straight to Mathura. And in Mathura, he met one gentleman called Subuddhi Rai, who was also from Bengal, who had also retired to take up spiritual life very deeply in Vrindavan. And Subuddhi Rai took him on a prikram around all the forests of Vrindavan. And then after that, because he couldn't find his brother, he decided to return to walk again back towards Benares and see if he could find his brother Sanatan, who meanwhile was coming by a different route to Vrindavan. So he was coming and he decided to go. He stayed only a month in Vrindavan. When Sanatan arrived in Vrindavan, he also met Subuddhi Rai, and Subuddhi Rai told him everything, what Rupa was doing, where he was going and so forth. So then Rupa Goswami, having understood that Sanatan had already been released from jail because he was placed in jail when he tried to leave his government service, that he had already been released from jail and that he was on his way to Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami felt peaceful enough, satisfied enough to return to Bengal for some time. It is said actually about a year, in which time he took the time to make sure that all his family were all right, to make sure they had the money that they needed and everything was taken care of, because as we hear, he left very suddenly. And in that time, his brother, Anupam, also left this world. Then Rupa Goswami continued on to Jagannath Puri alone. And when he got to Jagannath Puri, it was just about the time of the Rath Yatra festival. Now, Rupa Goswami had already spent 10 days hearing everything from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was not a person who took this 10 days lightly. He had deeply, deeply taken in all the instructions that he had been given and all the teachings that he had been taught. So when he came to Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing in front of the Rath Yatra cart. And when he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing in front of the Rath Yatra cart, interestingly enough, there was something that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was singing. In the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, there is two verses given that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was singing. This is in Madhya Lila chapter 1. There it explains that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would dance in front of Lord Jagannath and he would sing, "I have gotten that Lord of my life for whom I was burning in a fire of lusty desires." Now, anyone could understand that as being something very ordinary. Burning in a fire of lusty desires. I have met the Lord of my life. We can picture these words coming out of the mouth of any movie heroine in some very, very dramatic love scene. So people in general, when Lord Chaitanya would sing like this, it wasn't easy for them to understand his meaning. It was covered. He was saying something outward. So an outward man or woman would gather the outward appearance of his words. But the inward he was keeping very, very, very hidden. But Srila Rupa Goswami understood the mind and heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So while he was in Jagannath Puri during that time at that Rath Yatra, he decided that he would write because he was a poet. He was the best of all Vaishnava poets. So he decided to write himself a verse that had the same inner meaning to the verse that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself continuously recited in front of Lord Jagannath during the Rath Yatra. And he wrote that verse. And he placed that verse right upon the roof of his thatched hut where he was living at Siddhabakur. And then he went to take his noontime bath. And while he was away, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came there daily to see Rupa, to see Haridas, to see Sanatan when he was in Jagannath Puri, he came and he saw this thatched leaf tucked into the roof and he pulled it out and he read it. And when he read this verse, and unfortunately, although it makes no sense whatsoever, I don't have that verse in front of me. So please excuse me, but it's in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, Madhyam Lila, chapter 1, the translation of that verse. But in that verse, he indicated the deep secret meaning of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood. That here was the mood of Radharani, how she was feeling when Krishna left to go to Mathura. Interestingly enough, earlier it is said that earlier in the life of Rupa Goswami, he wrote two poems. They're not poems like an astakam. They're not an 8-verse poem. They're like about a 140-verse poem. And one of them is called Hansaduta. And the other one is called Uddhav Sandesh. And in Hansaduta, Rupa Goswami is describing the mood of Lalita Devi, who is talking to a swan. She goes to the bank of the river Jamuna because Srimati Radharani has fainted as if dead in separation from Krishna now that Krishna has left for Mathura. So Lalita Devi goes to the river Jamuna to get some water to sprinkle on her face and she sees a beautiful swan. And in her innocence of her love, she takes the swan to be a messenger. So she decides to instruct the swan on what the swan should take as a message to Krishna in Mathura, to tell him the condition of everyone in Vrindavan now that he has left them. And she describes in that, in as we heard, the gopi messengers, they can be quite straightforward, even loquacious. Even they can be quite rude at times, angry, but all out of love. So Lalita Devi takes the, in this beautiful poem of Rupa Goswami, takes the Das Avatar, which we've all heard of, Sri Jayadev Goswami's Das Avatar. She glorifies Krishna as all the Das Avatar, one after another. And she makes them so harsh. She says, you are just like Lord Nrisimhadev, your nails are so harsh, and you're trying to kill my friend. And on she goes on like this. She's describing to Krishna, but all out of the ecstasy of her love. So this is something, as Prabhupada said to us, we heard this morning, is not easy for us to understand at this time in our Krishna consciousness. But it was very natural for Srila Rupa Goswami. He understood everything, all the secret inner meanings and moods of Lord Chaitanya, who is in the mood of Srimati Radharani. He understood everything. And so he wrote this verse describing this mood of separation. And he, when Lord Chaitanya saw this verse, he said to him, how could you understand my intention? And so Swarup Damodar replied, because Swarup Damodar was also extremely close and intimate with Lord Chaitanya. He said, if Rupa Goswami can understand your mind and attention, your intention, he must have received your Lordship's special benediction. And the Lord said yes. He said yes. I was so pleased with Rupa Goswami that I embraced him and I bestowed upon him all the necessary potencies for preaching this bhakti cult. So this is why we are followers of Srila Rupa Goswami. This is why Srila Prabhupada says this Krishna consciousness movement is under the supervision of Srila Rupa Goswami. And this is why, as we become accustomed to hearing from these great personalities and hearing about these great personalities, our Krishna consciousness will grow. It will naturally grow. We'll naturally feel less and less inclined towards trying to enjoy the reflection. And we'll feel more and more interested in understanding the substance. We'll become intelligent, because actually, that's intelligent, isn't it? If you think for a moment, that's intelligent. So that's why Prabhupada, he loved to use the word rascal. And sometimes he would incorporate rascal and fool. So if we were to listen to Srila Prabhupada calling people rascals, we might feel that it's a little harsh. But if we understand how unintelligent we are here, chewing the chewed, trying to enjoy the dream, not willing to wake up, not believing that Krishna can satisfy us, then we would truly be able to understand that we deserve, all of us, to be called rascals. Rascals and fools. But not rascals and fools in a nasty, harsh, cruel, judgmental way. But in a very simple and honest way, we should see that actually I should become deeply connected to Krishna through devotional life. This will be the most valuable thing for me. And this is what Srila Prabhupada is urging us to do. Urged us to do and is still urging us to do the same thing now. And I should find out what it is that is stopping me. And for that, whatever it is, I need help. So I should beg for some help and see if it comes. And if it comes, like it did for Srila Rupa Goswami, then I will become not a rascal anymore, but an extremely fortunate person. So Srila Rupa Goswami wrote about 14 books. There's a list given by Srila Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And some of those books are what you would call technical books. And some of those books are completely rasic. Rasic meaning that they describe the rasa or the sweetness of the pastimes of Vrindavan. He wrote two plays, Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava. And one of those plays describes Krishna in Dwarka, and one describes Krishna in Vrindavan. And Krishna in Dwarka is known as? No, what is the name of Krishna when he's in Dwarka? Vasudev Krishna. Yes. Dwarkadish. Vasudev Krishna, yes. And when he's in Vrindavan, he's Govinda, Shama Sunda, Kunja Vihari. This is Krishna. So, of course, Rupa Goswami is a servant of Govinda, Shamasunda, Kunja Bihari, Balava. He's a servant there in Vrindavan. But for the consolation of those Vaishnavas who find it so difficult to accept that Krishna could even imagine leaving Vrindavan, Srila Rupa Goswami wrote this beautiful play, Lalita Madhava, wherein he describes how even in Dwarka, it is only Radha and Krishna. Everything there, it is actually only still Radha and Krishna, but in a Dwarka form. So these books are very special. They're very elevated books. They're not books that many of us, especially myself, tend to read very often here in this Western atmosphere, because there's so much sensuality in the atmosphere around us, that is difficult to have the purity of mind to be able to read about transcendental loving emotions without becoming disturbed by the lower sensual emotions that are what are gripping the whole of society in an extremely overt way at the present moment. But when one is in Vrindavan, it is very much easier to read these books, even though also in Vrindavan, one can see superficially the effects of Kali Yuga also. But I would like to go from here to the main book, or the most famous of Rupa Goswami's books, which is of course the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is also known for us as the Nectar of Devotion, because Srila Prabhupada wrote a summary study of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And in 1970, I think it was in May or June, Srila Prabhupada finally got that book back from the printer. He began in 1960 translating Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu before he had even come to the West. But he had many other obligations and responsibilities, and thus he actually finally received the book back from the printer in 1970, 10 years later. And when he received that book, he gave a little lecture. He said, so the Goswamis have given their principles, especially to the general public, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We have translated this book into the Nectar of Devotion. So our business is, everything is there. We have to follow. And my Guru Maharaj is described as Rupa Nuga Virudapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harini. He was strictly to follow the Rupanuga principle. Rupanuga principle, Srila Rupa Goswami directs in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And what is this principle? Now Srila Prabhupada here is going to emphasize a very practical principle, because Srila Prabhupada's mission is to give Krishna consciousness widely and freely to the whole world. Not to speak only of the most esoteric inner meaning that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was keeping very secretly within his heart, but to make this Krishna consciousness movement available for everyone and anyone. So he speaks therefore on the principle of preaching. This is one of the principles of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says, Yena tena prakarena mana krishne niveshayat sarva vidhi nisheda sur etayo eva kinkara. Just like in Europe and America, some of our friends criticize that Swami Maharaj, he is not doing this, he is not doing that. We are doing everything. But our main business, says Srila Prabhupada, is just to induce them, that means everyone, to become Krishna conscious. This is the secret. You have to induce them. Then even there is some discrepancy in the rules and regulations, it doesn't matter. Rupa Goswami says, first of all, we must be Krishna conscious somehow or another. We must find out. It can be changed according to country, climate and circumstances. But the result we have to see by the result whether one has become Krishna conscious. That is wanted. This is wanted. Then we say that this is the rule. You don't do this, we don't do that. In the beginning, we have many difficulties. Then we say afterwards that this is the rule. In other words, in the beginning, you try to induce them. Please take to Krishna consciousness. Later you can explain, this is like this and that is like that. In the beginning we have many difficulties because their behavior, their culture, everything is just opposite, exactly opposite. So how can you expect everything to the right point? It is not possible. So we have to find out the means, how to induce them to become Krishna conscious. That is my first business. So that is the secret. So this was Srila Prabhupada's mood. And he told them, and in fact, somehow or another by Krishna's good fortune, I was actually present in the temple in Los Angeles when Srila Prabhupada gave out that first series of Nectar of Devotion books. And he gave everyone, all the devotees in the temple, their own copy. And we were all very excited because we had a copy of the Nectar of Devotion directly from him. And then he told us that we had to have a midday class every day. We had a morning class and an evening class, and now we had a midday class as well. And a midday class is difficult. It's right after lunch. And everyone was sleepy. And it was so difficult. Nectar of Devotion in those days was so difficult. It was so alien to us because it's all talking about Krishna and in the spiritual world. And he told us, you start at the beginning and you just go around the room paragraph by paragraph. You read and read and read and read for an hour like this, and you read every day, and when you finish the book, you start again. He said, so we have published our Nectar of Devotion. So every one of you should read this Nectar of Devotion repeatedly. The whole substance of Vaishnava philosophy and activities, everything is there. So every one of you read this Nectar of Devotion once, twice, thrice. Unless you have got full-fledged idea of what is this Krishna consciousness movement, you cannot take advantage of this great literature. So please take advantage of this literature and be firmly situated in Krishna consciousness. So this was actually a fact, that by hearing about Krishna from the Nectar of Devotion, it becomes very much easier to understand, as I was speaking about earlier, that there is a substance beyond time. And this is Rupa Goswami's actual gift to us, on a much deeper level yet, than the one that Srila Prabhupada is speaking of. Srila Prabhupada is speaking how Rupa Goswami wanted to induce people, please come, please come, please take up Krishna consciousness. This is very, very essential and merciful. But now here we all are. We've all taken up Krishna consciousness. So we've already accepted that gift of Rupa Goswami. So what is next? Oh, next we have to become trained. We have to become technicians. We have to become actually able to understand what is spiritual, what is material. and what the spiritual world is like, so that by understanding of this, we can see this world in relationship to Krishna. And when we see this world in relationship to Krishna, this is called Jivan Mukta, Srila Rupa Goswami explains. You become liberated even whilst you're in this world, if you can see this world in relationship to Krishna. And the process to do that, he also gives. And that is the process of Yukta Vairagya, or taking whatever you have, whatever you are, whatever you may be, whatever desires you have, and using them all in the service of Krishna, dedicating them back to Krishna. But to do that, you have to understand who Krishna is. And then you have to also develop some kind of a sense of connectedness to him. Otherwise, how would you do it? You won't be able to do it. You won't be doing it, even if you think you're doing it. You won't be able to do it without that link. And so Srila Rupa Goswami, through Srila Prabhupada, through the Guru Parampara, is offering their hand to be that link so they can pull us towards the other side. Let me read you another little exchange with Srila Prabhupada. This took place in 1968. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. So one devotee, it was actually Madhavisa Prabhu. In 1968, he asked Srila Prabhupada very innocently on a particular day, which was the Rasalila day, the day when Krishna performs his Rasalila. He asked Srila Prabhupada, could you tell me something about Krishna's Rasalila? Now, all the devotees were so young at that time. And they were so, half-reformed. They were still very active in their interest in material enjoyment, and they were sincerely trying their best. So Srila Prabhupada was going to have to explain this a little carefully because it could be misunderstood by them. So he talked a little bit, he explained a little bit about Vrindavan, as you would to a child. And then he said, up to that point, then he said, Krishna, he said, up to 16 years he was in Vrindavan. And naturally, there were many children, boys and girls. They played together. And so they were very, very... Krishna loved everyone. And they all loved him. Vrindavan means simply central figure is Krishna and everyone loves. So some of those girls, they loved Krishna. And a girl's loving means that she wants Krishna as her husband. But according to Vedic concept, the girls are married at the age of 12 or 16 years, and boys are married from 20 to 25 years. So all the girls were mostly married, but Krishna, he was not married. And some of the girls were not married, but all the girls were very fond of Krishna. So from their childhood, they were friends. Krishna used to play his flute, and all the girls would come. So this Rasalila was performed on this day. The Krishna, in the full moon night, he played the flute, and the girls all assembled there, and there was a dance, Prabhupada says. There is similar dance, just like in your country. There is ball dance. But the specific significance of this dance, says Srila Prabhupada, using his newfound use of the English language, he said, but the specific significance of this dance was that Krishna bifurcated himself into so many boys, and so many girls were there, and they all began to dance in pairs, because Krishna bifurcated himself into many Krishnas. And that is the sum and substance of the Rasa Leela. So if you would like, you can go to Vrindavan. And if you would like to dance with Krishna, the facility is there for you. That is the ultimate goal of our life. If you want to love Krishna, similarly as the gopis loved, you can also have that chance. So all these rasas, says Srila Prabhupada, or rasa means humor. All these humors, all these tastes are present even in this material world in different ways as perverted reflections of spiritual rasa. Nothing is new here, but here it is a reflection only. Reality is there. So these five primary principles in loving affairs are there in the Vaikuntha world. And the Krishna consciousness movement means to practice Krishna consciousness while we are in this material body, and after giving up this body, we enter into the spiritual realm for factually participating with Krishna. This is the Krishna consciousness movement. So if you want to enter into the Rasa Leela, Prabhupada continued, if you desire like that, so you love Krishna in that way, as the gopis did, then you will have the same perfection. And then, in the way that only Prabhupada could say, he said, there is no difficulty. It is not at all difficult. Simply you have to practice. But, said Srila Prabhupada, you will have to forget this Rasa Leela of this material world. And then he chuckled a little bit. And he said, otherwise, this world will play havoc. That risk is also there. Yes. So Srila Prabhupada is giving a gentle warning. Do not go into this subject matter for your own pleasure. Go into this subject matter only if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness and please Krishna by doing so. And then Krishna will help you in every way. So I would like to give one final quote, and then we can complete this subject matter for tonight. Prabhupada said, this is an interesting quote to me, I just found this recently. This was written in 1967. So in 1967, Srila Prabhupada had just come to America. He had just established his preaching in New York. He had a few followers only. He had a small storefront. He had no indication of anything more than that. He was only mostly preaching right there. And then he heard through a letter from a friend in Vrindavan that the temple of Radha Damodar was in ill repair. And so he wrote a letter to a friend of his in Vrindavan called Nripin Babu, who I do not know who he is. And he wrote this as part of the letter. Please try to save the temple of Jiva Goswami, because in the very near future, many people from all parts of the world will come to see the temple and the samadhi of Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami. As you are going to restore order in the temple, I am always with you, because Srila Jiva Goswami's temple is my heart and soul. If Radha Damodar desires, many Americans will go to see the holy place of Sri Jiva Goswami in the very near future. Thank you very much. So if there are any questions, any comments, anything anyone would like to ask, please feel free to do so. Yes, Mataji. I'm sorry, I couldn't understand here properly. Yes. Rascals and fools. What did he mean by that? He meant that we're rascals and fools. Just think for a while. It's easy to understand. You just have to have a little bit of humility. Just a grain is enough. But you see, why did Prabhupada call people rascals and fools? Because Srila Prabhupada was always speaking about the highest truth. If you're speaking about this up here, then everyone in this room is small, right? If I'm talking about some insignificant thing down here, then you're all very big. You're all very important, because my subject matter is something not very important. But Srila Prabhupada was talking about the most and only important thing. He spoke on such a high level. And in his presence, when he would call you a rascal or a fool, it was quite extraordinary that everybody, I never actually heard of anyone who didn't digest it. Because his presence, he was so saintly, that when he looked at you and called you a rascal, you were the first to admit, yes, I'm a rascal. And then one time, he said to some of his younger disciples, you cannot do this. Do not go around calling people rascals and fools. I can do it because I am old. So he was also extraordinarily charming. Extremely charming. Yes. Yes, Prabhu. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. That the point being that Srila Prabhupada made the point, or it was spoken that he said that the nectar of devotion would be the law book for the next 10,000 years. I remember when I heard things like that as a young devotee, I also interpreted them as if they were going to be legal books and that, you know, the whole world was going to, you know, when they had a court case, they would bring this book out and they would make all the rules and everything and judge by this book. But I think that that may be possible. We cannot minimize anything that Srila Prabhupada has said, because who would have known in 1967 that so many hundreds and hundreds of Western people would make their way eagerly to the Radha Damodar temple? Who would have known that? We might have minimized that statement and said, well, you know, some people might find a slight interest in going there historically, it's an old place or something like that. So we wish not to minimize anything that Srila Prabhupada has said. But certainly there are two aspects to the nectar of devotion. The first, it is nectar of devotion for those who are not familiar with the book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhakti Ras, the term bhakti, the ras or the flavor or the mellow of bhakti, the taste, the sweet taste of bhakti is like a sindhu or an ocean. So it's as if there's an ocean of this sweet taste of bhakti. And when nectar of devotion, Rupa Goswami is trying to convey this, or explain this to others, he explains that there's a north and a south and an east and a west. And he puts his topics under these four directions. And then he makes, instead of chapters, where you say chapter one, chapter two, he makes them waves. He uses this analogy very poetically. And so the first section, the purva, is it the purva? Eastern, I think it is the first one. Eastern. Is all about sadhana bhakti. It gives all the rules and all the regulations, but it's a technical book. It's a technical book. It's not a book that you read at night for reading a storybook to your children. It's a technical book. You know, when you pick up, as an uneducated person, if I pick up a book, even a book of instructions on how to use some kind of new, modern, complicated technology, I have to try and figure out what on earth these people are talking about. But the young who have trained in IT, they talk this language, and a common man can't understand what they're talking about because they're not trained. So why do we think that the highest knowledge, the highest truth, doesn't require any training? Why do we think like that? It's got to be that we're rascals or fools. This is what Srila Prabhupada would say. When an engineer looks at a car, he looks at it differently than you. He looks at the car, you lift up the bonnet, he looks at it, and he looks and sees something wrong immediately. He knows how it works, but you just see all this metal under there. So similarly, the Nectar of Devotion is written as a technical, scientific methodology in how to practice returning from the material world to the platform of Krishna consciousness, full Krishna consciousness, being fully absorbed in Krishna and returning from the material world to the spiritual world eternally, to end up there. It's not about making life more pleasant here. It's about going there. So the first chapter, the first section, the eastern section, is about here, because here we are. So if there's nothing that reaches towards us to help us to get to there, how will we do it? So generally when people study the Nectar of Devotion, they only study that section, the eastern section, because it's the most relevant. And as I said, even that is somewhat technical. But then there are three more sections. The next section talks about prema bhakti, spontaneous love of Krishna. Then prema bhakti, all the levels and stages of prema bhakti. There's more training to go. It's not like kind of like the Christian idea, you go to heaven or hell and you've been a good person and at the end of your life. You know, somebody told me recently, it was just recently, they said, you know, whenever somebody dies, everybody says they're a good person. I've forgotten what the topic was, but I was really struck by it. Everybody says they're a good person. And I was thinking, yeah. Everybody, they forget, you know, maybe they weren't a good person. But, you know, you don't want to say anything bad, so then you sort of think, and we become very, very fuzzy and very kind of simple in our Krishna consciousness. It's so everyone's going to go back to Godhead. I'm going to go back to Godhead. Or maybe no one's going to go back to Godhead. But going back to Godhead is sort of what happens after some time. But what is it? What does it mean? Why don't we ask? Why don't we find out? Why don't we become educated? This is the challenge. So for this, Rupa Goswami will be the law book for the next 10,000 years. If you can pass the test of what Srila Rupa Goswami has put before you, you're making spiritual advancement. If you cannot, you're not. It'll be very simple and very clear. Of course it's not so simple, but the principle is correct. We have to follow the teachings given to us by him. So he teaches about sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, when prema bhakti is like a bud about to blossom into a flower. He teaches what prema bhakti is like when you have love of Krishna full blown in the heart. And then he tells you from there on the other sectors, all the rasas and what happens in the spiritual world. And when I was a young devotee in 1970 with the Nectar of Devotion in my hand, I remember it vividly. As soon as we started reading it, I'd fall asleep. I'd fall asleep and I couldn't understand, what is this book? It was so difficult for me because most of it, I came to understand later, most of it isn't about here. So I just go to sleep. But now, after many long years and long practice, I begin to see that this book, now I begin to understand this is a very essential book, a very important book, and we should all gradually mature into that understanding for ourselves. This is very important for our Krishna consciousness to grow. Anything else? Any other points? You must have a question. Yes.
How Prabhupada could say that so many people
Yes. I cannot understand, of course, naturally, I cannot understand the mind and heart of an exalted personality like Srila Prabhupada. But I can understand that he had full faith in what he was delivering. Full faith. Not like, you know, we see so much rubbish in this world, commercialized advertisement, this nonsense thing, that nonsense thing, so on and so forth. All kinds of headings and titles and recommendations and so on, until you go sort of like crazy from everybody just trying to blast you with the supposed value of something which isn't there. And on testing, you become cynical. See, it doesn't work like that. But Prabhupada had something, and it wasn't just blind faith. I have full faith in this, here, you please buy this. But he had full faith that Krishna was real, and that Krishna consciousness would work, and that the holy name was Krishna himself. And so when he was delivering his product, he had also had a full understanding that all of us who are sitting here, who are everywhere, we are all tiny particles of Krishna. And that if this Krishna Naam, Krishna's name, would touch us, it could wake us up. And I have I hope I can find it for you, a very nice quote where Srila Prabhupada says like that. It is not hopeless, because sometimes we feel, oh, for me it's hopeless. He said, no, it's not hopeless. He said, even just a little touch can wake one up, because we're naturally Krishna conscious. So he knew that. And so therefore he wasn't daunted when there wasn't any success. He didn't feel like, maybe this won't really work. He never felt like that. So his consciousness was very extraordinary. And as a result of that, here we all are. This is his blessing. All right, if we have no more questions, where's our Keshava Prabhu? I think we're just on time, aren't we?